Right. Good morning and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop on your talk radio station, of course, Eagle FM. I'm your host, Loisa Shimi, and I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30. And I'm very, very pleased to have you with us this Monday morning. And of course, in this segment, as usual, we'll dive into the important discussion on economic affairs. We're talking about trade policy, entrepreneurship, and of course, matters that affect your livelihood. That is in terms of income, saving, investment policies, and of course extras. And on that, I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30. But before I dive into the segment of international segment, please do not forget to connect with us on social media platforms. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Eagle FM Namibia, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and of course the alerts about our newspaper. And stay informed on the go, on the go by downloading the important app that is Eagle FM app, available on your both Google Play and of course the App Store. And do not forget to download the IMBA app that you find also on your Google Play and of course the App Store. Now, to start internationally, is that the World Food Safety Day is gaining importance in Nigeria, where street vendors play a vital role in feeding millions. Now, in Lagos, they are a familiar sight on almost every mainstream, catering to diverse food needs. However, in this largely unregulated sector, concerns about health and safety remain prevalent.
Kids across Lagos, street food vendors are a vital part of daily life. Without their services, many in the city will struggle to feed. The stress of cooking after spending hours at work and commuting in traffic makes patronizing a street food vendor a no-brainer for many.
Well, you know, sometimes you've had a hard, long day at work and you don't want to get home and cook, and it's just so easy to buy some street food and take home with you. So that could happen like 2 or 3 times in a week. And the street food, they're always so hot, so tasteful. Like this afternoon, you know, I was thinking, gosh, I don't think I have it in me to get home to cook. And I usually come around here, you know, Yaba area to shop for things like clothes, jewelry. And I always see this lovely, colorful yam and sauce or spaghetti and turkey. And today I'm like, you know what? I can spare some money and buy this lovely fried yam and sauce. And as they were bagging my food, I was having a taste of the sauce. I'm like, yeah, I made the right decision. Like, it's so tasteful. I love it when it's really hot.
But questions continue to remain over the safety of this business, which is largely unregulated. Quality control rests squarely with the food vendors themselves. But some consumers say they have their own filters.
Of course, I check the hygiene level. Sometimes the hygiene turns me off. I'm like, not today, no. But if I see that your space is quite, you know, it's quite clean, not too rough or dirty, yes, I stop and buy.
I don't just buy any of. I buy from somewhere that I know that, okay, I know someone that has tested the food before, that, okay, I can be rest assured that this people is food.
But how effective those filters are is debatable. While the informal food sector serves millions, it often lacks the basic infrastructure needed to keep food safe. Food nutritionists say contamination is common with street food, but that illnesses from such contamination often go unreported.
We have many bacteria that have been implicated in foodborne diseases. For instance, we have Salmonella outbreak, we have E. coli, we have Listeria among cytogen. And it results in, you know, diseases such as gastrointestinal disorder. But the thing is, in Nigeria, many of these outbreaks are not really documented. You have them in pockets here and there. Nobody, you know, sometimes people don't go to the hospital to report, except in cases where we have deaths.
While some street food vendors try to maintain basic hygiene practices and make their food safe, many either ignore them or are just plainly uninformed. Experts say some simple safety hacks could make the difference.
And the first of all these practices is washing of hands, use of soap, washing of surfaces, basically cleaning of your environment, cleaning of food handlers, working in a very hygienic environment. There are simple things that can be done by food handlers.
Virtually all the food vendors we spoke to vouched for the safety of their food and that their process is hygienic. Their problem, poor sales.
Customers to order is somehow difficult. There will be food in the freezer. We have enough storage in the freezer. But customers are the only challenges we have. I'm very cautious about hygiene. I hate dirty. I can't stay in a dirty environment, even where I live. While I'm cooking, my girls, my workers, they know me. I love cleanliness. It's my number one priority.
Despite her...
Right there, you have it. And of course, as an entrepreneur, just take away that your product should be clean, your environment should be clean, just to attract more of the customers as well. Because you might be wondering that, why am I not getting enough customers? But maybe you're not really cleaning your environment. So do clean your environment. And of course, you're keeping your product very clean and neat also. And so obviously people will also be turning up in a large number. And of course, the referral, they might also refer to a lot of people to come and buy your product at your clean place. So we might take a lesson to at the next item, whereby the farmers in Bakery East are racing to protect their animal as snowfall and of course freezing temperatures roam with little support and dwindling resources. Concerns are mounting over livestock survival. Now we might take a lesson to this particular update.
And snowfall, they fear that their livestock will die due to cold and hunger, citing a lack of resources and support from local officials. Temperatures in Barkly East are expected to drop to -1°C. Newsroom Africa's Liema Vumisa has more.
Coming to you in Barkly East, and that is, of course, as we build up the momentum to the expected snowfall that is expected to fall this very same Sunday afternoon, and of course, going through to the next week. Right now, we are still trying to gather as much a sentiment as far as preparations are concerned, and how the residents really of this particular area are trying to prepare for themselves ahead of that cold front, together with the rainfall and snowfall that is expected. Freaky, who is a farmer in this very same area, is joining us right now to expand on that. Thanks very much for joining us. Perhaps you can enlighten us then on the, I understand you're a farmer, you have livestock here. Yes. How do you prepare for them in such cases of cold runs?
The important thing is the preparations actually is a whole year round preparation. We have to keep our stock in good condition all year round so that they can survive cold fronts that are predicted, like the one coming. It's not just a 1 or 2 day preparation. You can't take skinny livestock in bad condition through a cold front like this one coming. So that's why I say it's a whole year through preparation. In summer, we give a lick to keep them, to utilize the fell to its maximum. And then going into winter, we change the licks to something with more energy so that the livestock can build up extra fat and to carry them through difficult times. And then just before a cold front like this, we bring them down from higher up camps from the mountains to the lower areas that's got shelter, natural shelter, bush and long grass and out of the wind as much as possible. Cause that's the way nature does it. Sometimes it's not a good idea to put them in sheds and let them go hungry and then take them outside. Then you're also doing no good. So we tend to learn from nature. What does nature do? We change our breeding season to just before the harsh winter and to just after the harsh winter. And we also prepare lands with green feed so that we can maintain the stock in lambing season. But fortunate for us, this cold front is not in our lambing season. So we don't have big threat as to lose a lot of lambs the farmers that do lamb the April, May lambing season, the lambs are big enough to survive this cold front.
Right.
Right, there you have it. The time is 14 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the jobs of 900 workers are at risk, and thousands of jobs from secondary industries are being threatened as Goodyear announced this week that it was closing its factory in Nelson Mandela Bay.
I mean, just looking at that story, how concerned are you as NUMSA that we may be facing more job cuts in the sector?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show. So, yes, we are very concerned about the announcement that was made by Goodyear South Africa that it intends to close its manufacturing plant, which is located in Kariga in the Eastern Cape. And the fact that in their letter, it's a proposal that this is what they intend to do. And of course, they talk about how it's likely to affect 907 workers. And the fact that we're looking here at, you know, these job losses, we must understand that more than 900 workers would be affected, because the closure of that plant, if it was to go through, would actually have an impact on the value chain. It would mean other businesses that are dependent on that particular, you know, and offering services to Goodyear would also be affected.
And talking about, you know, the ramifications of the closure of just one company, and what will it ultimately mean just for the value chain overall, at the same time, what does it mean for the Utene community to see major job losses in that sector, and how it will impact the people of that region?
It's going to have a major impact. Already, when the announcement was made, we got a flood of messages on our social media pages. Comrades have been communicating in WhatsApp groups. There's quite a lot of devastation, stress and distress, because Goodyear has a major impact on the local community, yeah, on the local economy there. And so people are very concerned that the closure of this plant will sort of deepen the situation. If you are in PE or in Gqeberha, one of the things you'll notice is that there are many, many empty factories, companies that have shut down. And in those areas where factories have closed and you see warehouses, empty warehouses that are not operational, you don't see companies coming in to take over. So it is actually becoming a ghost town in some places. Mm. And that is of major concern to people. That when you read comments, that is really what is worrying them, because it's very clear that people are concerned that if this company closes, what does it mean for the future? Are there any plans to replace these jobs? This is a province that has got very high unemployment. If you look at the reports from Stats SA, the unemployment rate in that region sits at 42%, which is almost as high as the national average. Mm. So really, we are going to require intervention, hopefully from government, to try and mitigate against the social implications of what will happen when that company closes down.
Mm. And Phakamile, have you reached out to Goodyear South Africa to try and see if, you know, there is a way to save some of these jobs?
When you read the Section 189 notice, they say that when they look at the business overall, they first of all feel that the reason they are proposing the closure of the manufacturing plant in that particular region is because the medium-term outlook for the economy as a whole is very poor. Secondly, they complain about the dumping of cheap products, of cheap tires, onto the sector through imports. And they also talk about the fact that in Europe, they are experiencing a contraction in the sector, to the extent where out of the 11 plants that exist in Europe, two have already closed down. So obviously we have not had a formal CCMA engagement with them in terms of Section 189. That is to come. And what we expect in that engagement would be for them to give us more details in their financials to demonstrate what they have stated in that letter. they don't see, according to their letter, they don't see an alternative.
Yeah.
We hope as a union to propose alternatives in those sessions. In every single Section 189, that is always our goal. Our goal is always to try and save jobs as much as possible. So it would be, you know, I can only tell you what's in the letter. We'd have to have engagements with them for me to be able to give you more information.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that there are growing concerns over the water crisis in South Africa. Now, aging infrastructure, lack of maintenance, and of course, criminality are some of the main reasons for the worsening crisis. Now, former Director General of the Water Department, that is Mike Muller, has said that an increased focus should be directed toward the country's infrastructure. We might take a listen to this segment.
Water shortages continue. So, begs the question, one, are these new problems that we are now seeing with more provinces, or are we not seeing an end to the old problems, which means we are doing nothing about it?
Yeah, thanks, Thabo. That's a good question. Good afternoon to you and your viewers. I think maybe we could start with that aging infrastructure. You know, we've been talking about aging infrastructure for 10 or so years. And back then it wasn't so bad, but you know, in the 10 years since we started talking about aging infrastructure, it's got kind of older. And in some cases, we really do need to do far more to replace the infrastructure that we have in the cities. We're losing a lot of water, and that's aggravating the situation. But there are other problems as well. One of the reasons that we're seeing cuts and demands for restriction of water use is that certainly in eThekwini and the KZN sort of central region and in Gauteng and the surrounding regions, we knew we were going to need more water. You know, there's a million more people in South Africa each year. That's not the immigration. That's people, you know, new children being born and children growing up and buying their own houses, moving to their own houses and using water. So we need more water to be able to use, or we need to use water better. And in the course of those last 10 years, not only did we not fix the old infrastructure, we delayed building the new infrastructure. So we're now caught with more and more water being lost in those old infrastructures, but now more people wanting and needing water, and there's nothing new to give them. So we really are beginning to feel the squeeze. And whether it's in eThekwini, where the municipality is talking about putting water restrictors on 550,000 households to try and reduce water use, or in Johannesburg and Gauteng, where people are having their water supply throttled, which sounds terrible and is actually doing quite a lot of damage, in these places, we really are going to have to think about how do we get enough water into our cities over the next few years before these big projects, the Umkhumazi project in KZN and the Lesotho Highlands project, which is going to serve Gauteng. What are we going to do until they're ready? We're talking 2 or 3 years, and we can see the problems are beginning to get really acute at the moment.
Depending on who you're listening to, but certain politicians, for example, that I would have spoken to about the water crisis would tell me that, well, you see, the biggest consumers of this resource are actually not residents, but actually industrial users, corporate South Africa businesses who actually use a bulk of this water that we all need. Now, in business, is there no collective wisdom that can come up with some proactive protection measures and solutions?
You know, the politicians should look at the numbers before they open their mouths too loudly. One of the problems we have with water compared to electricity, funnily enough, is that most of the water in cities is consumed by people, households. And, you know, unlike electricity where you've got big factories, you've got big installations which use a lot of electricity, people use a lot of water. And the industry actually, as far as we can see, there are obviously going to be exceptions, but is not the major problem. We certainly
All right, there you have it. The time is 23 minutes in the off, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to Zambia is that the government says to expect the genetic improvement program, that is IGP, of local fish species to ensure wide access to improve industry, that is fish industry. Now fisheries and livestock minister Peter Kampala says more financial resources will be now allocated in the national budget to boost the research efforts and the development of a long-term strategy for scaling up the breeding initiative of local fish species. You might take a listen.
Three fingerlings of the improved local fish species, Orochromis andersoni, or Kafue bream, to mark the success of the genetic improvement program. The journey started 6 years ago with a collection of native wild species, breeding, and production of generations 1 and 2 fish that recorded 12.9 and 11.7% genetic gain, respectively, surpassing the standard of between 6 to 8%. With support from the African Development Bank and SADC ProFish Blue Project, World Fish has been implementing the GIP at NADEC, whose consultancy closure comes into effect today.
As World Fish, we've been able to deliver, by close of the project in 2023, a number of milestones, namely production of generation the Kafue bream with a genetic gain of 12.9% of G1, which translates to about 17 grams weight gain, and a genetic gain of 11.7% of generation 2, which translates to 16 grams of weight gain, giving a total of about 33 grams of weight gain that the country has achieved under the ZADEC project.
Minister of Fisheries and Livestock Peter Kampala says government will continue to support genetic improvement programs of local fish species by allocating more resources to ensure access of improved fingerlings across the country.
To ensure sustainability, the government will continue supporting genetic improvement initiatives through dedicated budgetary allocations under my ministry. I hereby direct the ministry to develop a long-term strategy aimed at scaling up the breeding program and broadening access to improved fingerlings for small and medium-scale fish farmers across Zambia.
The Andersoni GIP is a project-based and 1 year without selective breeding in GIP means losing at least 10% genetic gain in growth.
Investment by government and its cooperating partners in the genetic improvement program of local fish species is key to the development of a sustainable aquaculture sector.
Right, there you had it. Now, women are leading a quiet revolution in the Gambia's green energy transition. Now, once a male-dominant field, solar energy is now welcoming a new generation of female installers who are lighting up remote areas and, of course, challenging long-held gender roles. You might take a listen.
Solar installation is their craft. A team of young women arrives at this remote farm in Busra, more than 30 kilometers away from Gambia's capital, Banjul. Solar installation is their craft. On this mission, they are working to install a 15-kilowatt solar system at this agricultural site, far beyond the reach of the national power grid. Their work is a rare sight in the Gambia, where few women are able to obtain this skill level.
These women are breaking barriers, stepping into roles once reserved for only men. They are not only powering homes, offices, and farms like this one, but also lighting up the way for a more sustainable and inclusive green energy future.
Patinjai is a solar system installer at Mbolo, a local NGO that is dedicated to training more women for careers in the green energy sector. She is the project lead of the solar plant installation.
I see myself in the future to have to train more young women on renewable energy so that the world can change from fossil fuel to become really renewable energy users. Because the way that we are going, fuel is very expensive. But with the energy, with the sun, energy is free.
Fatoumata Traoré is one of the young women in training with hopes of building a career in the field. Equipped with the right skills, she believes women can break barriers and play a leading role in delivering green energy solutions.
When we are given the space and the environment for us to express what we can do and then practicalize it, then we'll be able to, you know, create more. Like the saying goes, if you educate a woman, you educate the nation. And then if a lot of women are into the renewable energy field, then we can make a lot of changes in the future.
With several projects already completed across the country, these women are fast becoming key players in the field.
Working with them, I don't regret nothing. Only gain to see how they perform. And currently, I can tell you, through the Climate Promise, we are offering almost $105,000, which is supporting three businesses to become an IP, independent power producers. So for that being the case, I think these youths will be very important in the addressing the NDC of the government.
The Gambia government aims to accelerate the country's transition to sourcing 50% of its electricity from renewable energy by 2030.
In all our...
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. Now, lastly on international segment is that the Tanzanian government has set ambitious goals to boosting horticultural export to $2 billion annually by 2030. Now, cutting post-harvest losses from 40% to 5% and expanding into 14 new international markets. Now, key investment includes cold storage and new avocado collection centers aimed at empowering thousands of farmers. We might take a lesson.
For rapid growth. Under the government's new budget, the industry projected to generate $2 billion a year by 2030, up from $1.2 billion today, as part of a wider plan to grow total farm exports to $5 billion. Unlike traditional agriculture that focuses on staples like maize or wheat, horticulture specializes on higher value crops, from avocados to French beans, that earn more export dollars per acre but require stricter handling.
As we gather here today, horticulture is the highest revenue generator for the government in the agricultural sector.
Dr. Mkindi praised a strategy focusing on reducing post-harvest losses from 40% to just 5%, as well as investment in cold storage and entry into 14 new markets, including China for pineapples and Israel for avocados. A standout initiative is the launch of 5 high-tech avocado collection centers in the Southern Highlands, designed to benefit 2,000 farmers and to boost daily handling capacity by 50 metric tons. But analysts argue that the ambitious goals could require consistent policy follow-through, modernized logistics, and better access to financing for small-scale farmers. With strong execution, Tanzania could become one of Africa's leading horticulture exporters, linking rural livelihoods with global markets and turning...
All right, there you have it. The time is 32 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. And, of course, this is early morning scoop. Now, we might take a listen to a very short commercial break. And once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafata na nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisamwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa olonjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro nirandithoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngwe tuende timeneha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is...
All right, the time is 34 minutes in the office o'clock and this is early morning scoop. Welcome back. And if you just join us right now, a very good morning to you and thank you for joining us here on the early morning scoop. And of course, this is the show where we give you the policy update when it comes to entrepreneurship. And of course, policy update, that what we give your entrepreneurship, that what we give you here until the hour of 7:30. Now, to start with one of the lead story in our today's edition, that is the newspaper, the Village newspaper. Please not forget to subscribe for the newspaper. And of course, you can also be can send through your details to 081-200-4144. 081-200-4144. That's the number you can save, please, so that we can be getting the newspaper every time it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you can get the newspaper, that is now through the website or perhaps also the channel. But on channel, just to, subscribe to the WhatsApp channel, that of course we can be getting the newspaper. That is now the, Eagle FM Media House channel. Now, to start, is just the National Power Electric Utility Company, that is NamPower, says it will need 4.7 billion Namibian dollars to electrify 206,000 households in both Pelly urban and rural areas by 2030. And now, this was revealed last month during the National Electrification Engagement with the Distribution Sector, now held in Ondangwa. Now, the winter season has highlighted the pressing need to connect more households to the national electricity grid to enable access to basic energy needs such as heating water for bathing. Now, urbanization has also increased demand as rural to urban migration continues to drive the growth of town population. Now, according to the national, National Statistics, Namibia has 756,339 households, now many of which still lack access to electricity, especially in rural and very urban areas. Now, to address this gap, NamPower plans to connect 30,000 peri-urban households per year, starting in the 2025-26 financial year and continuing through to 2029 to 2030. And of course, for more or rather the full article, please do not forget to just subscribe to the channel. You'll find it there in the in today's edition, that is the VRA newspaper. And of course, you can get to the channel, that is the Eagle FM Media House, please, for the full article. Now, to move on to the next item, is that Namibia's egg production sector is flourishing with, of course, both commercial and, of course, informal producers supplying approximately 370,000 eggs daily, while also there is a potential for Namibia to achieve self-sufficiency in egg production. Challenges remain particularly concerning access to larger retail shelves. Now, in today's segment, of course, we will now explore the significance of egg production in Namibia and, of course, discuss the potential for rapid growth growth in the poultry sector, especially considering that the Namibia poultry industry's population, or rather production value, reached 1.74 billion Namibian dollars in 2024, an estimated 13% increase from 1.5 billion Namibian dollars in 2023. Now, we also now hear from the poultry farmer Gustav Unona, who will now share the insights on the importance of egg production in the sector. You might take a listen.
Yes, to all the EKLFM listeners, today we are going to look on eggs production in Namibia. So according to the Namibian Poultry Producers Association, what we call PPA, the Namibian poultry industry's production value reached the amount of 1.74 billion in 2024, representing an approximately 13% increases from the 1.5 billion recorded in 2023. The sector now stands as the second largest contributor to Namibia's agricultural production, trailing only the cattle industry, which recorded an estimated 3.2 billion in 2024. According to the PPA, with poultry products, eggs and meat being among the most affordable protein sources for many households in Namibia, this presents an ideal opportunity for local poultry farmers to get organized and enjoy a fair market share of these essential products. So today we are going to engage with one of the farmers, Mr. Gustav. Good morning, Gustav, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Elena and all EGLFM listeners.
I'm very good. Well, my first question is that the poultry sector has the potential to grow beyond its current level and create wealth for Namibians. What are your recommendations to boost the sector from its current level?
Thank you so much. First of all, I would like to say that I'm very glad to hear that poultry sector is also one of the sectors that is growing, and it's able to provide food. You know that we're having a scarcity of poultry farming and poultry production in Namibia.
Yeah.
So, this poultry, it started to grow all of a sudden, and it's almost reached this target to produce or to fulfill the need of the Namibian food. About the potential, you know, what is first of all, we need to educate our Namibian poultry farmer on poultry farming. So that we need improvement on poultry, especially chicken. You know, chicken are easy to be farmed compared to other poultry, compared to other sectors like livestock of cattle, goats, sheep, and others. So, this will help also the food to grow, to ask Namibian poultry farmers to get an opportunity to bring a lot of food that Namibia are still need. You know that we are not yet reached the target.
Yeah.
We are trying to reach the target. Probably, in the meantime, we are the one of the centers which was not counted. You know, the chicken farming was not counted. If you are farming a chicken, we are not one of the people who can maybe look as a reliable person. People thought cattle or meat production, which are coming from cattle, is the only one.
It's the only one that can bring something in our country and especially to the economy.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, but the poultry sector has now has the potential to grow beyond its current.
Yeah.
And it creates where you spoke it.
Mm-hmm.
So, this will also help our Namibian, you know, to get a lot of social and contributions to our global.
Yeah.
Space. So, I'm really glad to hear that, according to the PPA.
Okay. Okay, my another question, Mr. Gustav, is that the poetry business is also one of the businesses that can be done in rural areas which face high unemployment. So what are your suggestions? Do you have for more rural-based poetry businesses and to enhance participation in rural areas?
You know, Bella, thank you. One of the things that we do know here in Namibia, the place where the poultry farming has to take place.
Yeah.
And we have two places that we have to locate our poultry farming. There is a reason also why we are farming the poultry. And let me just focus on unemployment that you indicate over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me just give an example of myself. I remember myself when I was a security guard. I like to figure it out. That point always, whenever someone asks me about higher unemployment in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we decided to tackle the unemployment, let me say about this poultry industry. There is a huge gap that needs to be filled through poultry farming. And you know, poultry farming is creating higher employment for the youth. The problem that we are currently having is when we finish our school, and many of us we learn about agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
We only decided to go be employed by other farmers. But if you live in a rural area, it's where I also start my poultry. It can elevate and it can help the youth to have their own poultry farming and create business. Bella, can I give an example of mine?
Yeah.
Because I say that I started a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where people are not thought that they can do something that you can build this country. The place that we are having is a rural area. It's a small white, even though it looks small, but it's very white when it comes to poultry farming. Unemployment people, they need to start their business there in the rural area. Because most of the people, they live already there in the rural area. Because you cannot live in town without any employment. It will be very tough for you. So I started my business in the rural area when I was unemployed. And it helped me at least to come at the standard where I've been able to rural area. Because many people, they don't know where to start, how to come up with your own poultry farming. But you live at a nice, fertile land where maize can grow for free.
Okay, my last question is that, Mr. Gustav, like cooperatives are encouraged among poultry farmers to them to be able to gain market shares. Why is this important?
It's very important because in Namibia, currently there's no one who can able to produce the quantity that is being required or being asked by PPA. Agricultural production, they want food to be distributed in the country. They want food to be exported out of the country. Currently, even beyond the red line, there is no one, a single one, who can able to produce what is needed. So cooperative is always here. When we are talking about cooperative,
there
is a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to the cooperative, especially, or let me say it is a challenge to poultry farmer. We are still having a, maybe let me say, someone selling 100 or 150, 200 chicken, which are producing eggs. So when we are saying, let's came up or make a joint venture in order to sell in quantity, because the organization that is being represented, the government of Namibia, such as Agronomic Board, AMTA, they want to buy it in bulk. Yeah, so we need a cooperative in order to sell in bulk.
Yes, so which means it's kind of very hard for people to work together.
Definitely. Definitely. So cooperative is very important to us. But before that, we need to be educated how to join cooperative. How to sell in a cooperative. Which person, someone's percentage is someone's going to get if you invest in a cooperative way. And it's also going to help us because for now, we are selling one by one and sometimes you don't have a lot of customers in the area that you live. We are now just focusing on the people who live in the rural area. At the same time, they cannot come on time. We need to sell at a relevant time. We need to sell on a daily basis. We need to sell if you are producing 50 trays of eggs. They need to go today as soon as possible because there are schools that are waiting for those. But if you are there in the village, just selling alone, you cannot make it at all. You better join a cooperative. It will help us, definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us or maybe for being with us on Early Morning Scoop, Mrs. Yusuf, and I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Thank you so much, Brenda. And lastly, I just want to say that please, poultry farmer, to put more effort.
And to work together also.
Poultry, it's something that looks like it's not really important and it's not big. But if you can see, there is no house can live without a chicken at our village, at your village, at my village, at my house, at your house.
No, you are right.
So we have to start from there. And the poultry, you know that it's very easy to farm with poultry, to me myself, because, you know, it's a small portion that you are having, you can use it for poultry, and you can able to produce a lot. Yeah, I always make a funny statement saying that and you can do it anytime, any minute. They don't have a condition. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
There you had it from Mr. Gustav Onona, one of the poultry farmer. Now he just indicated that in the country, in Namibia, the poultry production has grown, and of course is fulfilling the needs for the Namibian people. However, more education, of course, mentoring need to take place in order just to reach the target, and of course providing a training. That's what he said. And he expressed that the concerns that the poultry sector is not really given the same consideration as other sectors. And of course he just emphasized also that if the poultry sector is enhanced in rural area, now it will also help stop urbanization and of course promote development, allowing people to produce food in their own villages. Now to move on to the next item, Eagle FM listeners, is that to just move on to the wool sector, to the wool industry actually, is that Namibia's wool sector, particularly the caracal pelt industry, is a crucial component of the Namibians or nationals economy, although wool exports represent a smaller portion of overall export value compared to minerals. And of course, other goods in the industry significantly contributes to employment and of course rural livelihood. Now, projection indicates that wool export from Namibia will now reach approximately $151,000 by 2026, up from $137,000 in 2021, now with an anticipated average growth rate of 1.6% annually. Now, since 2005, Namibian's wool supply has risen by 13.4% year on year. And of course, on this, the Namibia ranked 78th in global wool export, with COVID overtaking it at $137,000. Now, the top three countries for wool export are China, Italy, and Germany, respectively. Now, to gain a better understanding of this industry, of course, wool and the market dynamic, we might take a listen to Moses Helao just to take us through this field.
Briefly just explain to us how the wool industry is and, of course, what is the market looks like?
Well, thank you for the question.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the wool,
mm-hmm.
The wool industry is good, but it's not easy.
Okay.
As I said, because when it's coming to the wool industry, now we are suffered a bit. That's why now sometimes I feel like mm-hmm. we need to maybe we ask the Minister of Trade, because now there was a time they want to set up a plant in Kitman,
mm-hmm.
to process the raw wool.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they can do, they were supposed to engage all the local farmer around Karas and Hardap region,
mm-hmm.
just to come and sell their wool to their plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the plant, they can process the wool, and then we as a weaver or wool users, then we can come direct to the plant and we can buy the wool from there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the challenge is that some people, they try to buy the wool, put up their own price,
mm-hmm.
and to negotiate the farmer, and they can put up the price. And then what they do now, they send the raw wool to the supermarket market to
mm-hmm.
be processed on the other side, and then to be resaled back to Namibia.
Mm.
Then as a local weaver, then I think that we cannot afford.
Okay.
Because now when you think about the kg, I remember there was a time those supplying company, they approached me,
mm-hmm.
but their a kg is, it will cost you about 100, between 130 and 140. If you buy about maybe 2 ton, it's going to be a lot of money, plus the transport, plus GST, is going to be far too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Elau, you highlighted some of the challenges that are within this industry. Now, in your view, how can maybe the wool industry be now enhanced just to improve the value chain or the value addition?
As I said, maybe if you can have something just to prove, to process the war in the country, mm-hmm. it will be much better.
Okay.
That's only the problem. Mm-hmm. And then even maybe if we can have, if the Swakara board, if they can put up the price,
mm-hmm.
not only Mao says, I have my own price, you, Lois have your own price, they will have their own price, and then I think, no, this is not a good. That is killing off some of the business, like the SME.
Mm.
The giant company, they are happy, but the SME.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag, your data matters.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not...
They are suffered. Because when it's coming to the... To the price, if the price is too high, then of course the SME, they cannot afford to buy.
Mm.
That's why I feel like maybe if there was maybe a committee that look after the prices of the wool, and then also the wool must be processed from the farmer, because now you, as I said, maybe you can buy things like at 2 tons,
mm.
and then end of the day you can only maybe use maybe 1,800 kg of wool. The rest 200 kg is wasted.
Mm.
Yeah, but you pay, when you pay, they charge everything. They said the best bale is what, but the bale is, the wool is not sorted, it's not even clean.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Helao, when it comes now to developing this industry, because of course we see that people are not really into it, maybe what alternative maybe can be implemented just to ensure that the industry grows as well?
When it's coming to the wool, like a caracal sheep,
mm.
they are more like in the south of the country.
Okay.
And then that's why, most of the people that are like in the south of the country, they are so lucky. And then I always, encourage them just to venture in the wool, in the sheep,
mm-hmm.
in the, because I think like in the sheep, if you are a sheep farmer, you can sell the wool, the skin and the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But to come back to your question, that how can we? It's not so easy. But what I do, also encourage the people, like a student or school kids who come down here,
mm-hmm.
I say to them, you better become a farmer.
Okay.
In your life, for the sheep, of course, you are much sorted, because now, like now. The Copenhagen, as I said, their market, their business is doing good now. Whereby the farmer, they kill the baby before the, 24 hours.
Oh, okay.
It is 2 days.
Hmm.
And then they sell their pearls, the Copenhagen market.
Hmm.
For the past 2-3 years, it was very bad, but now I heard that from this year, it's the farmers, they are jumping. They are very happy.
Mm-hmm.
It means now, if you have become a sheep farmer, you will thank yourself at the end. I remember last 4 years, the Minister of Trade, they were planning to have a plant in Kietman. If they can have a plant like local,
mm-hmm.
it will help the SME in the country.
Okay.
Because to me here, I'm seeing many people that come here, they want to start a business, but when it's coming to the process, how to get a wool, like we are at the coast. To get the wool from Kasberg, from Mariendal, from Kietman, it's not so easy at all. Like me, I used to use a Transnamib to transport my wool from Kietman to Swakop, but now there's no more train between Kietman and Swakop.
Mm.
That's another huge challenge. It means now you have to use a truck.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe end of your last words that you'll also want to share with the public, maybe encouragement for those people that also want to venture into this industry.
Namibians, I know that we in Namibia sometimes we are afraid of the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge is a part of life. Even the government, the world, they also borrow money from where? From the World Bank, from where? It's not so easy for us just to just fold our hand and waiting for the government to give us something.
Mm.
You see, you can, if you have your mind, if you want to start up a business, go to the, especially the youngs, go to the bank, borrow the money, and you can start. But our problem is that you go to the bank, you borrow the money. Once you get the money in your hand, then you change your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
You use up the money in something different. Some people, they start to eat up the seed.
Mm-hmm.
End of the day, how can you plant if you eat up the seed?
Mm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Helao, for having you today on our Elements Cube. All right. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure for having me, and thank you very much, and goodbye.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, the time is 5 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. So there you heard it from Mr. Helao, where he just indicated that, like, there's a need for setting up the plant and, of course, process so that, the local waiver, can also buy there instead of everyone just putting their prices and, making them suffer. Now to move on to the, another item on the, rather production, of course, is that the government has recently reduced the export levy on various raw skins. Now the export levy on raw skins and hides has now decreased from 60% to 15%, while the levy on pickled skins has been lowered from 15% to 10%. However, now this move is viewed as contradictory to the country's aspirations for value addition and, of course, agro-processing, as it encourages the export of raw materials. Now, the national process IDO tanneries, while leather materials prices continue to soar. Now, let's hear from Fina Shilongo of Shilongo Leather Company, who will also unpack those developments for us. We might take a listen. What is maybe your take on this discussion and also having this reduction? Will it not also promote the raw export of hide and, of course, animal skins? What is your take?
So basically the high export levy has been a nightmare to the industry for over a lot of years. And I understand why there's a concern thinking that it might affect us negatively, given that now we are exporting our raw materials as opposed to using them within the country, which I understand. Mm-hmm. However, I think it's important for us to realize how it adds a lot of value also to the country if we are able to trade in this global industry and also partake in the global transactions, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to importing and exporting. And I think it also makes Namibia a big game player if we position ourselves to be able to, like, sell or export, so to say, to bigger markets, to big international markets. So from my take as someone inside the industry,
mm-hmm.
I think it will serve the country well, and it will put Namibia on the map, so to say, that we are a strong, like, leather manufacturer or leather maker.
Speak to us, like, you mentioned that, like, it was the levy, the higher levy was a bit of a nightmare to you guys. How was it like? What challenges maybe did you also you guys encounter during that specific time whereby the levy was a bit higher?
Okay, so basically it forces the manufacturer to have higher pricing, because the higher the levy, the more they have to factor it in within their pricing. So for one, it really used to cost, higher prices within the industry. And then also, let me mention again that leather is a very, very huge industry. It's a multi-billion industry across the globe. So a lot of countries, they need this material. You know, they need to buy it in huge masses. So I think It now made it better that the levy is relaxed, because now it only means more sales for Namibia.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so I just encourage everyone to see it this way. It's basically just allowing for more sales and more fair pricing.
All right. Now, given the development of the leather industry in Namibia, how will maybe this move encourage also leather industry development?
It would, because then, as I say, there's a huge market out of there. So there was a lot of friction when it was 60% levy. There was a lot of friction because a lot of people could now not afford this.
Mm.
So now that it's relaxed, a lot of local people can now, the opportunity is now greater to step into this industry, because now it's now cheaper. It's now made more affordable.
Mm. I see a lot of people are not really into this industry. Like, why is it so? And of course, how can maybe the government or the industry can be enhanced better to get people into the industry?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, for one, I must say that the reason why, or the biggest reason I can think of now, why not a lot of people are engaging in this industry is because, for one, it's not quite easy. It needs a lot of technical support. It needs a lot of manpower and a lot of many things, you know, to kind of make it work. It's kind of like quite a tricky process, this making leather. But then that should not discourage anyone. And if you say, where can the government step in? I think like the government should look at the problems that are laid out in front, the problems that are being experienced already by the currently thriving players in the industry. And then I'm sure if they can, problems like water, for instance, I understand this is one of the concerns where like the process requires a lot of water,
okay.
And then there is something like a shortage on water or maybe high pricing in water. So these are the things that we should kind of like try, and the government should look into from the players that are already thriving in the industry. And then once these things are corrected, I think it will be then, it will provide a more bigger room for others to come in. Yes, and just to add, and just generally, before I close off, I really want anyone that's listening to this to go away from the thinking of that the levy is here to make it worse for us, or now we are putting, no, I want everyone to see it as though the levy now relaxes the bar so that we can allow for more sales, which adds value to the country. And let me also just say, Namibia is one of, if not one of the only two countries in SADC that produces leather skins from raw until finished, until processed, until players like ourselves, Shilongo Leather Works, can come and make a shoe from it.
Okay.
And this is, I feel like this is something that we should, it's from a private entity, but we should take it as a national pride, and we should try to see where we can help these people that are helping us to put them maybe on a unique position that we can now process skins until finished. So, yes.
So thank you so much, Mefina, for having you today on the Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you so much.
All right.
For having me.
All right, another manufacturer, Josephine Silas, will now also share her insight on this particular topic. We might take a listen.
And joining me this morning on the Early Morning Scoop here on Eagle FM, we speak to Madam Josephine Silas from Sabakatani Leather, who is a leather manufacturing business in Namibia. Madam Josephine, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners.
And thank you for having me.
If we start off obviously with this particular discussion, Madam, this is based upon the development of the leather industry. And obviously looking at the particular trends, the impacts, the challenges potentially, as well as also where do you see this industry going? If we start off from the aspect of, you know, participating or being a manufacturer of leather products, How is the industry developing? And actually, where do you source your rawhide or your inputs, which is one of the most important things, the raw material that leads to the final leather product?
About the industry is great. I'm so happy how people are like, how Namibian people are so open to manufacturing their own products, especially the bags. Now people don't buy from the stores anymore. And I'm also grateful to our fellow Namibians for supporting the local. Yeah, and people who manufacturing like the bags, let me just be specific on the bag side. They are very supportive. They don't feel like maybe if I help this person, then she will get more customers than me. So they are a bit open, not just a bit, they are just open. Yeah, so we get the materials from the China shop that we are exposed to those ones. I don't know about the local or the genuine leader, but we are exposed to this one from the China shop. And I think they are affordable at the stage where I am.
All right. And if we just weigh up that particular discussion, obviously you're talking about you highlighted one specific product, but what are the variety of products that you can manufacture specifically from leather? It's obviously not just bags. We're obviously looking at shoes. We're looking at other particular products. So what further potential can you see?
I think it's only shoes or maybe, with the material that we use, maybe the seat covers. What else? Yeah, those are the only things I see. So I don't know any other. So
no, it's all good, madam. When we also look at the aspect in terms of you purchasing some input products from the Chinese shops, why specifically is it that you can source something from the Chinatown businesses? Is there also no other particular hide or skin suppliers or extra input suppliers, for example, like certain cloths and materials that can help you manufacture a final or a finished handbag, leather handbag?
You know, I'm new in the industry. So what I saw first is the material from the China shop, and I didn't do any research about the Namibian suppliers about litter. So I have no idea about who supply litter in Namibia or somewhere else. So maybe after months or after years, when I'm really, when I have time, like enough time, like for now my time is a bit divided here and there. So when I get enough time, and then I will put myself into this production of the bags and the other things, that's when maybe I will be able to know about who supplies litter here and there.
And another question on that is also, In terms of the pricing, is it expensive? Is it affordable in terms of, sourcing these other particular inputs, whether it be from Chinatown or from anyone else? Is it based upon the affordability of these input prices?
Not really expensive. But you have to buy a material that you can be able to make something that the other people can also afford. Like, we only sell in the open market and on the social media, and most of our customers, maybe some of them are learners, some of them are unemployed, so you have to level. So about the material, it's kind of expensive if you calculate. It's a bit expensive. Because 140 in a meter, getting 3 bags, and you are going to sell it for 100. It's a bit expensive.
But would you ever consider buying from a tannery that might be able to, that might sell you a faulty piece of hide or leather in terms of your overall production? Would you ever consider buying from such a particular institution?
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
You know those materials like the old bags, they carry a lot. It's either design or the quality of it. Sometimes you can get some of the parts of the bag and then reuse it again to give the bag quality or the shoe quality or whatever you are manufacturing. Yeah, we do buy.
All right.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, but sometimes it's a little bit because they waste time sometimes.
All right. Madam Silas, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners. Thank you once again for the interview.
And thank you for having me.
Not a problem.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikawa shafa sana nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia. Ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitomwa yoe. Yongeshifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konaraje takuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniyaj. Eagle FM. The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Right. The time is 22 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock. And this is early morning skip. We have about 7 minutes to hand over the mic to Tate Mike. Now to move on to sport update, of course, in sport news, the FNB Women's Super League final. So Beauty FC over Trump of African Star Queen FC with a source of 1-0. But my colleague now, David Chombe, spoke with assistant coach Matthew Angula for more details on this exciting match. You might take a listen.
Yes, we are continuing with early morning scoop. We are taking you back to what was happening at Soccer House. Thinking back what was happening at Soccer House in the weekend, I got into the conversation with Matthew Angola. Matthew Angola is an assistant coach of Beauty FC. Beauty FC is the champion of Women's Super League Cup, sponsored by FNB and also other stakeholders. However, I'm going to engage him particularly how they manage to coach, and also they manage also to put together the team of young ladies who were very good at in the pitch, and they managed also to beat African star queens. Matthew Angola, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Let us look at you being an assistant coach, or you being one of the leaders of the team. How long did it take you to put this whole team together, and how was the match so far?
Yeah,
say the match was very, very well.
Yeah.
It was very wonderful.
Yeah.
We played beautiful football. We won 1-0 against the African Stars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all I can say for now.
Yeah, but how long did it take you to put this team together? And what were some of the challenges before you mold or come together, bring together the champion like Beauty FC today?
Yeah, it takes somebody's qualities. You have to be a leader, as a coach.
Yeah.
You have to know what you are doing.
Yeah.
You have to instill basics on the players,
yeah.
especially discipline among the players. If you have disciplined players, then you can say you have a team.
Yeah.
You also have to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
All the way from the training ground and into the field of play. So, it takes somebody to be responsibility
yeah.
and also to mold that team
yeah.
and also become a champion.
Uh-huh. Now, looking at women's league or looking at the football for women, there have been a lot of stereotypes in the community about women will not be taken anywhere by sport, especially football. But today, and also what we see currently in this country, we see upliftment of football, upliftment of young people's talent. And what I want from you is to give a message to those one who have different views. Can be young ladies with talent, but they are still struggling with this thing to say, I'm a woman, I cannot play football.
Yeah, Beauty's having become the champion of this Women's Super League.
Yeah.
It's a proof to whatever stereotype that community may have.
Yeah.
Women football is something that's very wonderful,
yeah.
interesting,
yeah.
Modern football,
yeah.
Something that's very, very now attractive
yeah.
and interesting. Everyone want to invest. I see it's developing as well.
Yeah.
Everyone want to invest into women football.
Yeah.
Try to uplift such types of developments.
Yeah.
And that's all.
Yeah. Maybe before we go to the last question, we have seen the new administration of Mene Tumbona Ndaitwah put on the table around 200 million to invest in sport. And also 50 million to invest in upliftment of leagues around the country. Now, what is your view on this, and how best do you think this money should be used to uplift Namibian sports?
I'm very much proud about that, what our Namibian president has done about sports.
Yeah.
However, I have to say that that's a very good move.
Yeah.
I love the initiative.
Yeah.
I would just say that maybe they should look at the developing the infrastructures first,
yeah.
Having enough for sports fields,
yeah.
especially football fields,
yeah.
For women as well, as we are struggling with the field of place in Namibia, and also trying to avail equipments as well, training equipments, and all those stuffs.
Okay, let's say you get all the sponsors that you want and all the equipment that you want. Where do you see Beauty FC in the next 2 years, to say?
Yeah, not only beauties,
yeah.
Women football at large in the whole country.
Yeah,
if we have to avail such equipments, infrastructures, the fields,
yeah.
Women football will flourish in Namibia. Yeah. I can tell you,
uh-huh.
you will see it's going and it's something that's very, very interesting.
Yeah. Maybe you'll find a way to the parents who don't want their kids to jump out of the house or just to enter the sport field or whatever sport field, even if they have talent. What is your message to them?
Yeah, women football brings a lot.
Yeah.
It carries a lot.
Yeah.
So I would advise the parents to give that freedom to yeah. the girl child
yeah.
to have that freedom to participate in women football and experience such exciting moments.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are welcome. Say keep well.
Right there you had it. The time is 28 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and of course this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for staying with us on this edition that is Early Morning Scoop, and do not forget also to connect with us by following us on our social media platform Mikela Fam Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course the Village Newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well. Do not forget to rather subscribe to our WhatsApp channel that is Eagle FM Media House, just to catch up also on the newspaper outlets and of course the daily news update. And do not forget to download the Eagle FM app, the most important app that we have, so that at least you can be able to tune in from the app or website, or you can also able to rather tune into all the past show or the missed out show that you missed. You can able to listen or to tune in from the app. That is, the all the podcasts are lined up there for you to tune in. Thank you so much. And from me, Loisa Shimi, it's a good day. Enjoy your rest of the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikawa shafa sana na longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anageshefa ya Namibia, ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nena. Kara omkwa shifareki uimopo yo mo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konarahe tatu imu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, so ayo.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Dio Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simaneka Karunga, the Afrikaans Sengfuor Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.